The Olympia Theatre has had many names in the course of its lifetime. The Widder Quinlan's Free and Easy, Connell's Monster Saloon, the Star of Erin Musical, Dan Lowry's Musical, Dan Lowry's Palace of Varieties, the Empire Palace Theatre, the Olympia Theatre, and most recently, the Three Olympia Theatre. The Empire became the Olympia in 1923, Empire being a decidedly ill-advised name for any business in the newly independent free state riven by civil war. Nowadays, it can accommodate 1,287 seated patrons or 1,600 with standing room. The interior is that of the classic 19th century theatre. Pits, stalls, galleries, cloakrooms, the upper circle, plush seating, velvet curtains, cosy bars. The Lumiere brothers introduced Dublin audiences to the wonder of film in this very theatre in 1896. The Freeman's Journal reviewed the famous short films L'Arrivée d'un Train and La Mer as follows. The scene is an exact reproduction of the life and bustle and tumult to be witnessed at the great railway depots of the world. The representation of the sea bathing was also wonderfully true to life. The audience witnessed the bathers jumping into the water, and the spray caused by the plunge rose into the air and descended again in fleecy showers. The brothers would return to Dublin the following year to record the first ever film footage on Irish soil. Horses, pedestrians and cyclists dicing with death on O'Connell Street. As the Lumiere brothers themselves might say, plus ça change. The present building also goes back to 1897. The aforementioned Dan Lowry, who'd been in charge since 1879, mortgaged all his properties, including the family home, in order to double capacity. The main entrance was originally on Sycamore Street, but Lowry changed it so that audiences would enter via Dame Street, as we do today. The journey to one's seat can still feel somewhat disorienting because the auditorium is the wrong way around. The great music hall singer and comedian Charles Coburn performed The Man Who Broke the Bank at Monte Carlo at the official opening, a song we will return to in due course. Music hall was the dominant genre of the time. Mixed bills of melodramas, ballads, light opera, popular songs, recitations, sketches, solo turns, and American-style minstrel routines, ranging in tone from the comical to the sentimental to the risque. Lowry and the Unionist management introduced a controversial policy of playing God Save the Queen after every performance, something that rankled with nationalist audiences. Padraig Kearney, who wrote the Irish National Anthem, made his feelings clear in 1915. As the orchestra played the opening strains of God Save the King, he quote-unquote washed them out of the pit with a fire hose. Like many Irish theatres, the Olympia continued to import most of its theatrical talent from London long after independence and the notional break with Britain. The outbreak of World War II, aka the emergency, had the unintended consequence of forcing Dublin theatres to properly nurture homegrown talent for the first time. Performers like Jack Cruise, Cecil Sheridan, Noel Purcell and the young Maureen Potter became mainstays of the Dublin stage thanks to the widespread fear of German U-boats tootling around in the Irish Sea. British talent might be torpedoed to high heaven, so we'd have to do it ourselves. Maureen Potter claimed to have been inadvertently responsible for the North Strand bombing. In 1938, after performing for an audience in Berlin that included Adolf Hitler himself, no less a personage than Hermann Göring, head of the German Luftwaffe, came backstage to congratulate the 13-year-old Maureen. The following exchange is supposed to have taken place. "My mammy doesn't like yous. Where do you live?" "Fairview." "Where is that?" "Near the North Strand." If this story is to be believed, and I would advise a hefty pinch of salt, Göring waited 3 years to be avenged on Maureen Potter. German bombs fell on the North Strand the night of the 31st of May 1941, shattering the quiet of neutral Dublin. Speaking of things falling out of the sky, the immense proscenium of the Olympia collapsed unexpectedly in November 1974 during rehearsals for West Side Story. Luckily, the actors were out for lunch at the time, so no one was killed or injured. If it had happened during the show that evening, there would have been dozens of deaths. That said, it looked for quite a while like this was to be the death of the Olympia. The London-based owners were keen to sell up, and Dublin Corporation were reluctant to lift a finger. This great theatre would have been lost had it not been for an alliance of theatre makers and theatre goers, spearheaded by Brendan Smith, head of the Olympia Board and founder of the Dublin Theatre Festival. These people were no doubt motivated by the demolition of the Theatre Royal in 1962 and the Queen's Theatre in 1969. A mini auditorium was built among the wreckage to host fundraisers. In May 1975, actor Siobhan McKenna laid a wreath at the former site of the Queen's Theatre and walked from there to the Olympia with Noel Purcell, Maureen Potter and hundreds of other theatre professionals in what became known as the Olympia Walk. Many sympathetic Dubliners joined them en route and queued up at the box office with bundles of pound notes to donate to the cause. This clear demonstration of vox populi made Dublin Corporation change their tune. They slapped a preservation order on the building and contributed towards the £250,000 required for restoration. The Olympia threw open its doors once again on the 14th of March 1977. I'm going to bring it back to my parents now for a moment, if you'll indulge me. As I said, my mother first set eyes on my father while he was strutting around naked on the project stage in 1981. They didn't cross paths afterwards. My father first set eyes on my mother from the Gods of the Olympia. She was playing Sarah Tansey in the Druid production of The Playboy of the Western World in September 1982. Drink a health to the wonders of the Western world, the pirates, preachers, putchine makers with the jobbing jockeys, parching peelers and the juries filled their stomachs selling judgments of the English law. He was impressed. He was charmed. But once again, they didn't meet. Ships passing in the night, ghostly apparitions of the playhouse. Speaking of which, the Olympia's resident ghost is called the Grey Lady. She's now known as the Three Grey Lady. Many people claim to have seen a strange otherworldly light in the corridors. Jerry Crews, son of the legendary Jack, told me he encountered her while opping Cinderella in 1973. Another ghostly presence is Dublin's forgotten river, the Puddle. Also known as the River Sawlia, as in the famous song about the old woman in the woods. The Puddle flows directly underneath the Olympia and may have contributed to the collapse of the proscenium arch back in 74. Dublin City was founded in 837 AD at the point where the River Puddle met the River Liffey. The name comes from the Irish Dubh Linn, meaning black pool. That site is just behind us where the Chester Beatty Library is today. The Puddle rises near Tulla, flows through Mount Jerome Cemetery, final resting place of J.M. Singh and Cecil Sheridan, and continues on to St. Patrick's Cathedral and Dublin Castle. This was Dublin's main source of fresh water for 500 years. It flows underneath our feet right here, right now, and then on under the Olympia, under Dublin Theatre Festival headquarters, and out into the Liffey at Wellington Quay. Spooky. Okay, folks, our next stop is Trinity College. Walk straight up Dame Street until you get to the statue of Henry Grattan. You'll find him standing on the big traffic island just opposite the main entrance at Front Arch. As we pass Fauna Street to the left, spare a thought for Madame Violante, the Italian trapeze artist who was driven out of Dublin by the Smock Alley management. Spare a thought also for the live babies that were strapped to her feet as she walked the rope. And while you're walking, I hope you enjoyed this rendition of Charles Coburn's The Man That Broke the Bank in Monte Carlo, as sung by Dublin's own Dorina Gallagher and Sinead Murphy. This was the song that captured the imagination of Dubliners at the grand opening of what is now the Olympia in 1897. As you continue along Dame Street, you can pretend that you're walking along the Bois de Boulogne with an independent air. You hear the girls declare, "He must be a millionaire."
Southern shore, I to Monte Carlo went, just to raise me winter's rent. Dame Fortune smiled upon me as she'd never done before, and I've now such lots of money, I'm a gent. Yes, I've now such lots of money, I'm a gent. As I walk along the Bois de Boulogne with an independent air, you can hear the girls declare, "He broke the bank in Monte Carlo. Oh, I stay indoors till after lunch, and then me daily walk is one grand triumphant march to the grand triumphant arch. Observed by each observer with the keenness of a hawk, I'm a mass of money, linen, silk and stars. Yes, he's a mass of money, linen, silk and starch. As I walk along the bob along with an independent air, you can hear the girls declare he must be a millionaire. You can hear them sigh and wish to die. You can see them wink the other eye for the man that broke the bank in Monte Carlo. Tables at the Monte Carlo Hill till they hadn't got a sou for a Christian or a Jew. I quickly went to Paris for the charms of Mademoiselle. She's the darling of my heart, what can I do? When with 20 tongues she swears she will be true,
I will be true.
Oh, you will, won't you?
I will, I swear it.
As I walk along the bob along with an independent air, you can hear the girls declare he must be a millionaire. You can hear them sigh and wish to die. You can see them wink the other eye for the man that broke the bank in Monte Carlo.
Once more for Ireland.
All together now. Wink the other eye for the man that broke the bank in Monte Carlo.